This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, Chris and I like professional wrestling. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And to begin tonight, very special impromptu Shake Them Ropes theater, Requiem for a Slapjack. Chris has asked for this time to perform a eulogy for the great WWE sports entertainer known as Slapjack.
Yeah, you know, Jeff, I heard the news this week, and
I heard the news today.
I heard the news this week, and the old acoustic git fiddle here had been out of commission for several months, but I was so moved by the news here today that I just needed to go up to Denton, get this thing fixed up for this occasion here, and I wanted to play a song that you might remember, that I remember, that perhaps we all remember. It goes like this.
How many roads must a slapjack go down before we see Slapjack again? Oh, the answer, my friend, it is jacking in the wind. The answer, it is jacking in the wind. I said, oh, the answer, it is jacking in the wind. Jeff Hawkins, it
answers.
Is jacking in the wind. Free Slapjack. Hey, Tony Khan, get the wallet out. Get the wallet out. Pay for the gimmick. Get him on my TV.
Very good job of me just throwing you a bit and you running with it. yes, this episode is sponsored by MyBookie. A little bit more about them in a bit. But yeah, starting with more cuts. Chris, budget. Oh, let's tighten those drawstrings a little here, because
it's just hard for this company. It's hard for a company on the
streets.
It's
hard out
these
here
days.
For a pimp.
Yeah,
is what
yeah,
it
really is.
Fight.
That actually really sort of epitomizes the independent contractor relationship he's got.
Jeff's arcane reference, a little on the nose on that one. Okay. Fightful, our friends over there, tweeting this out. Fightful has learned that WWE has released John Morrison, Top Dollar, Ashante Adonis, Isaiah Swerve Scott, Tegan Knox, Drake Maverick, Shane Thorne, a.k.a. Slapjack, and Jackson Riker. Of course, the official statement is that Johnny Ace made these calls, citing budget cuts right before Thanksgiving. I guess we got to go with the top story on this one, and that is that Hit Row is no mo. That's what it
is. How is WWE going to be able to afford Brock Lesnar given the state of their budget these days, Jeff? Okay, Hit Row.
Let's talk with the accounting.
All right. Hit Row.
Yeah, this one, very shocking, yet at the same time, You can rationalize if you want in your head. Number one, B-Fab getting cut. Let's put it this way. I know I can euphemize. If you throw a fit over your friend being cut and you start yelling at people, that's not a good idea. It also is not really a good idea. Let me blindly speculate, because I did not ask about these parts. But we know history. We know Vince. We know Vince thinks of himself as a rugged individualist. So if you have a soft spot for your friends, well, you're not taking this seriously. You don't want to be a real star in this business. look, Top Dollar had the Twitter things. Sure, he had nuclear heat in the locker room from a number of sources saying that to both Sean Ross Sapp and myself. Let me put another one out here on the table for you, Chris. I have not heard yet chatted up, and it's going to throw the company in a bad light. So I apologize to those of you who are WWE fans right now, but we're going to talk a little adult. How do I put this? This is some sensitive conversation right here, Chris. Vince and Bruce, not the most enlightened fellows in the world. I think I can say that without you giving me pushback on that. They are probably ones who do not know what even to do with an act like Hit Row. I assume that writers put this on a list saying, this is the kind of talent we have ideas for. We have a lot of ideas for, okay, let's bring them up, see what they got. Oh, and let me put it this way. There's an old metaphor I have for the WWE is that Vince McMahon runs a casting department. He doesn't run a professional wrestling organization. He runs a casting department. He's casting movies. He makes movies. Well, he looks at Hit Row, and they're a faction. They're a tag team. And he and Bruce are probably chatting. And they, hey, we have a black tag team on SmackDown. We have the Street Profits. We have a black tag team on Raw. We have the New Day. We have Cedric and Shelton, who we are already doing nothing with. Why do we need another one when we already have better versions? I could see that conversation happen. I'm not saying that's what happened, but I could see that happening in modern day WWE.
Well, I also think that after they lose B-Fab, who is the sort of female contrast to the three males, you look at the group now and you go, they're sort of nondescript,
yes,
as you were saying. Now, where I think WWE has made a grievous error when it comes to Hit Row is that this is for a WWE fan, a group that you have been following since they were in NXT. Granted, it's been a short run, but they were given a great introduction. They had a number of nice moments on an NXT that has not had many nice moments. They've been a nice spot in there, even if they've been a little bit rocky. The act seems really solid. Swerve, a solid anchor for the act. Top Dollar, clearly the guy they're interested in, Ashani the Adonis, could actually work.
Yes.
Like they had all of the makings of a good WWE faction, mm-hmm, that a viewer had been watching and getting engaged in because they had been getting a serious push. So for them to be gone, erased from your television set, like it was nothing, I think that actually will quietly turn off some fans. Especially fans who are
people of color. How about that?
Yeah. In particular, people of color. I was going to say people who bought the merchandise, period.
That too. But man, you have an old demographic right now and nobody's connecting on that youth level. The Street Profits could have. The Street Profits to me are money. They don't see them that way. Especially Montez Ford. Montez Ford is a superstar and they have let him die on the vine while he's been up there. The New Day, they were just goofs until they started proving that they could sell merchandise and get over, quite frankly. This was a mid-card act full of guys that had nothing going for them. They got together and said, hey, we can prove ourselves. And they did, and good for them. But this just baffles me in that way, in that we're trying to expand our audience. We're trying to keep our audience. We're trying to, I think it's a nice, noble goal to make your audience a little bit less white, quite frankly. And wrestling is a very white sport, to be honest with you. And trust me, even when I was a kid, even though the performers were all white, people of color loved professional wrestling where I lived. The lower middle class where I lived, where it was a very homogenous group of Filipino, few Asian, a lot of African Americans, because we had 4 military bases within 20 minutes of where I live. So it was a very, you know, transplant-y type of thing where people come in and out. And we also, Allen Iverson and the Vic brothers came from my area. We're not rolling in money in Newport News exactly. You either work at the shipyard, go in the military, or you leave town. That was one of those things. But as I said, one of the things that kept me from getting beat up in middle school was the fact that I could connect with these kids on a level in terms of talking wrestling. We could always talk wrestling, and they loved Ric Flair. They loved the Horseman. Ric Flair has made his way into pop culture through hip hop. I just, why would you not take the opportunity? Now you have a natural connection to hip hop. You have a hip hop gimmick that they know what they're doing. They know how to produce music. They're literally producing music for themselves. It's a marketing thing. It's a marketing Tesla coil is what it is, Chris, because they're producing their own music. They can make their own themes. They can make their own merch pretty much in terms of graphics and stuff too. I feel for Swerve, but he's going to be fine. AEW is going to pick him up in a heartbeat.
I mean, this, I think, could be a big mistake for WWE in the fact that they cut them all pretty much simultaneously, which means they can just reunite and do this under a different name.
Yeah, the issue, only issue with that is that Top Dollar has basically been in the business less than a year. He's had, I think, a total of 6 total matches, and he's done 1 wrestling move in them. I think that's the stats I heard. I could see Ashante and Swerve staying a team, but Swerve is such a bigger star anyways. He doesn't need the others, but it'd be nice if they did stay a unit. They don't have to stay a unit, though.
No, they don't have to stay a unit. But, I mean, the appeal here is, okay, for WWE fans who might, the people I just mentioned who might be turned off by this, they have some value added as a faction, even if you have 3 of the 4. You have B-Fab and Ashanti the Adonis with Swerve. I think that's enough to get people to
check
out.
I think Top Dollar and B-Fab, if they went to, say, the Nightmare Factory, that would not be the worst idea in the world. Okay, let's take a look at the others. John Morrison, he's over 40. Man, he was on a hot streak when he re-signed. He had finally learned to promo a little bit better. Still a great worker. Comes in, and it's like we say, once they've slotted you as something, you never get to evolve out of that unless you are the tip-top guy. And so he was John Morrison that we knew when he left.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's still pretty good, and I think he's a better promo. Here's the thing, Johnny Drip Drip, he was getting that over.
He's one of those guys where he can do good promos, and he can do comedy, and he likes doing comedy, even though comedy is a killer in terms of your aura. But if you're in WWE, who cares? Because
it worked with the slot that he was slotted in.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's what I meant. Yeah.
He wasn't going to transcend where he was at anyway, so why not be Johnny Drip Drip in that run?
I think a lot of money was probably left on the table with Tegan Knox getting cut. I get that her health is an issue, but they brought her up to the main roster and never even used her other than the Shotzi team. They split the Shotzi team.
And they named her Knox, too. They gave her that killer name.
Not everybody can be signed by AEW, but there are people that you can sign to AEW. And I think she's one of them. I think, you know, she has natural charisma. She's aesthetically pleasing. Let's put it that way. And she has great babyface fire. Now, the knees are an issue. I'm not going to deny the knees are an issue. It's the if she can stay healthy, .. But I just think that was an opportunity lost. Drake Maverick outkicked his coverage. Kind of knew that this was on the wall once he got brought up and was put back with the 24/7 geeks instead of being given something to do. He had kind of aged out of NXT in some ways, given their new directive. Charismatic as hell. I'd love to see him be a manager somewhere.
Yeah, I think he's a good underdog baby face, but yes, he's a great manager too. He's a great promo in this business.
Yes, and he did more with 205 Live than the company ever did in terms of making, you know, his role on there something important. Shane Thorne, I think he's going to reunite with Mikey Nichols. I think the Mighty Don't Kneel are back. And I think Jonah Rock's going to be a part of that faction again. They got a nice little Aussie faction there. Probably New Japan, maybe Noah again, something like that. You know,
he's going to get back to having good matches. Like, yes. We forget that at one point he was an NXT tag team champion.
Tag team champion, and that team stole the show and unfortunately got hurt. And that was the problem. And then after that, they just decided, well, we're not going to put you back together.
Yeah, we're not going to put you back together, and we're just going to give Shane Thorne a series of incomplete gimmicks culminating in Slapjack. Although, again, I hope that, like, whenever he's really up against the wall, he reverts to his alter ego of Slapjack.
And Jackson Ryker. Moving on, WWE sold more than 75,000 total tickets at the highest prices of any wrestling show in history for its two-day event on April 2nd and April 3rd at AT&T Stadium in Irving, Texas. It would be by far the most tickets the company has ever sold for a single event in the first days due to expanding WrestleMania to 2 days. At press time, there were about 37,500 tickets out for each night, according to sources close to the arena. As far as compared to individual dates, those numbers per show were lower than the first week most of the last several years. Some internally were disappointed by the number, blaming the ticket prices being priced too high. Duh. There is something to that. Given tons of tickets on the floor, traditionally the first to go, many as close as fourth row ringside directly, and third row on the sides, were still available at press time. I'm going to tell you something. You don't sell a lot of tickets if you don't know the card.
Especially when you're going to raise the rate. You're raising the rate for admission. You don't know what the card is. You're cutting everyone on the roster all the time. So, like, I don't know. What if I was looking forward to seeing Hit Row at WrestleMania?
Yeah.
Probably not going to be getting.
Probably not showing up. Probably saving my money on that. Yeah.
So I think they shouldn't be surprised. I saw that massaging the numbers initially, but then you said 35,000. I was like, wait. AT&T Stadium holds like upwards of 100,000
something. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I remember this.
Look, you're going to have two killer nights in order to sell this thing out for both nights. I don't see it. I don't see wrestling as that. Are you going to have Stone? And boy, here come the old guys back. I bet Stone Cold, The Rock. Hell, they may get Hogan in there for a match for all I know. The Undertaker. It's going to be old fogies home once again to try and get these people sold out. That's what it's going to be.
They're becoming what they used to make fun of WCW for being in the 90s. Do you remember those advertisements that they made where it was like, you know, Hogan and Savage are so old or whatever. And now, like, Vince is going to be bringing back people older than Hogan and Savage were when WWF was making those ads.
And you don't have anybody from NXT to draw upon because you've killed that brand. It's who's out there? Who are you going to get there, Vince?
Braun Breaker. This is the problem with Braun Breaker. You would have to repackage that guy to somebody else now and then, like, nitro push him for the next, like, 6 months to get, or five months to get him ready for WrestleMania. No, it's not going to happen.
Enjoy your battle royale, people. Enjoy that for your slot, because those are going to be the dream match. And then we're going to get a long Orton match. We're going to get a long Roman Reigns, whoever match, you know, Sasha, Charlotte, Becky, somewhere in there. You know, it's the usual type of things. Lulu Pencil, the second for Emi Sakura, is returned to Japan. Chris, have you ever checked out her work as a second for Emi Sakura? She is delightful. She's great on social media. She's the most wholesome person I've ever seen on social media, but she's this lackey heel who she abuses, and she's hilarious. If you have a chance, go watch the six woman on AEW Dark this week, where she goes in for, like, Emmy makes a move and she goes to do thumbs up on the camera and he just shoves her head down. It's a great act. Okay, that's it for the news. Let's shout out our sponsors this week and we can move on with this show. MyBookie, when it comes to gambling, you always want to make sure you're getting the best bang for your buck. That's why you should bet with MyBookie. MyBookie, you can bet all your favorite sports with exclusive promotions, contests, and more to find your winning bet. Right now, when you make your first deposit with MyBookie, you'll instantly receive double on your first deposit. Let's face it. This is gambling season, kids. We're getting into fall. We're getting into college football. We're getting into the heart of the NFL season. NBA is out there. Some of you degenerates can bet on hockey. Chris is a big hockey bettor. Loves betting on the Stars.
I am always thinking about the second and third strings of a lot of these teams in the league these days.
In the league? It's easy. All you have to do is go to mybookie.ag, sign up and use Chris's promo code ROPES, and MyBookie will double your first deposit.
That's from me. Tell him I sent you.
Yes. Right afterwards, up to $1,000. Yes. Use those extra funds for this week's biggest games. And you know what's easy money? The Thanksgiving games, especially the Lions. The Lions stink. Bet against them or bet for them. Maybe they'll pull it out for once. Who knows? But this promotion is only available for a limited time. And this copy isn't. So don't miss out. Head to mybookie.ag and use my promo code ROPES. Chris's promo code ROPES, our promo code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S.
Yeah, it's ROPES, just ROPES, not like ROPES, Chris. Even though I sent you, it's just ROPES.
I believe it's our time, Mr. Hand. And secure your double deposit bonus today. That's promo code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S, so you can double your funds to double your winnings. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with mybookie.ag. Thank them for their support. The copy is a little old. We've been asking them for weeks.
We punch it up, though. We punch it up.
No, we love their sponsorship. We just, you know.
We like fresh copy.
Use your extra funds to bet on this week's biggest games, including the battle between the Chiefs and the Titans. I got to cut this, don't I?
That's football, right?
Yeah. I don't. We're going to move on. Survivor Series preview, rapid fire. It's the last pay-per-view for WWE, as we're not doing TLC this year in December because we want to kill people before Rumble. Thank God. But yes, the stakes have never been lower. Team Red versus Team Blue. No real invasions. Just top guy goes one show, top guy goes other show.
And apparently the same management team on both brands. Yes. If you know, it's just Adam Pearce in a different shirt.
Earth 3 Adam Pearce and Earth 3 Sonya Deville being evil, stroking their chins, screwing with people. Because the Austin template worked years ago. Who cares? The Rock 25th Anniversary Battle Royal. 25-man dual-branded Battle Royal. Who cares? They haven't listed who's in it. Chris, give me a wild card here.
The Rock.
Yes. I'll say The Rock wins this too. The hell with it. It's in Barclays. He comes out, throws out a few people, says watch Red on Netflix or Red Code Red or whatever the hell is that bad movie is that he did on there, and go on with it. No titles on the line, so we're just going to keep on going. U.S. champ versus Intercontinental champ, Damian Priest versus Shinsuke with Boogs. Name it.
I'm going to say Damian Priest.
I say Priest as well. Nobody gives a crap about Nakamura on that roster. Anyways, they're not protecting him, and he's losing way too many matches. RK-Bro, Raw Tag Team Champions versus the Usos, the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. You say?
I say the Usos beat RK-Bro, and that leads to dissension between Orton and Riddle.
We've been calling for this dissension for months. It ain't ever going to happen. I say RK-Bro wins this, because I think the Usos get involved later in the night. Speaking of which, Big E versus Roman Reigns, WWE champ versus Universal champion. Who you got?
I think Big E loses, but like it's via like some technicality or something. I don't think like Roman pins or submits Big E.
I think since Big E was ended the night on the ground, I think he wins, but I think Brock comes out after the match and destroys them both because he can. The one that has a little bit of intrigue, Becky Lynch, the Raw Women's Champion, versus her good friend, her good pal, most professional actress on the roster, Charlotte Flair, the SmackDown Women's Champion. What say you?
I think Charlotte beats Becky here.
God help them if they do. Becky needs to beat Charlotte clean as a sheet. I'm sorry. She never loses clean. Rarely loses clean. I say beat her here. But again, who knows? They might be setting up an angle for Mania somewhere down here. But I'll go with Becky. You can go with Charlotte. I kind of agree with you, but I think I'm going to go with Becky. Now for the traditional 5-on-5. Again, stakes never lower.
They really have me on the edge of my seat, though, with these matches where if you lost, you were off the team, because the team matters and you want to be on the team because being on the team matters.
I am going to give you one piece of information, and this may determine how you think about the women's match, because we're going to start with the women's match. Vince McMahon is running the Aaliyah angle. Just keep that in mind. Team Raw, Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, Carmella, and Queen Zelina versus Team SmackDown, Sasha Banks, Shayna Baszler, Shotzi, Natalya, and Toni Storm, who has now been named as a replacement for one Aaliyah. Chris, what say you? You gotta turn off mute there, brother.
Yeah, I mean, you weren't missing anything, my
friend. No, I know. I was watching you. Okay, do you want to think, and I'll give my pick here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we have this set up with Sasha and Shotzi not getting along or something. So somehow Aaliyah is going to make her way back into this match and win it. That's my thinking.
Okay, all right. So then that would mean SmackDown wins.
Correct.
Okay, so I could believe that. I mean, and if Vince is involved in the Aaliyah angle, I think, look, the only thing that matters is Vince's opinion right now. So there you go. Let's go with that.
Yeah. And then Team Raw, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor. They have the emphasis here wrong. Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, Bobby Lashley, and Austin Theory with MVP versus Team SmackDown, Drew McIntyre, Jeff Hardy, King Woods, Happy Corbin, and Sheamus with Madcap Moss and Ridge Holland. You can go first this time.
Team Raw's winning this.
Team Raw is indeed winning this.
Team SmackDown is a joke team. When you see Jeff Hardy on, I mean, he's just like the red shirt, and then you have Happy Corbin in the mix here too, and it's, no, they're losing. They're losing.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, that finishes up our news and previews. It is time to open up the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Anything, anytime, anywhere, whatever we watched, we can comment on it. Now, I have hyped this for a couple of weeks, so I am going to begin this week, if you don't mind, Chris. Starrcade 89, I watched. Future Shock, perhaps the greatest high concept failure of any wrestling promotion ever. Pretty decent idea. We got four Hoss teams. We got four great wrestlers. Let's do a round robin of both. One probably would have sufficed. Now, to understand Starrcade 89, you kind of have to understand Starrcade 88 and the state of NWA / Jim Crockett Promotions at the time. The end of Starrcade, right afterwards, by the time we get up to this Starrcade, Dusty Rhodes is gone. J.J. Dillon is gone. Barry Windham is gone. Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson are in WWE as well. Although this is the show where Arn and Ole make a comeback, or, you know, the first big show where they make a comeback. They made a comeback on a TV taping before this. So Dusty had left the promotion kind of in shambles, because at the end of Starrcade, he had turned the Road Warriors heel. If you remember that angle where Dusty got a spike in his eye and bled all over television, and then they basically fired him then. So he went up to there. The Horsemen are no more. You don't have your main heel group to run against your top babyface. Sting's okay, but he's not great. Luger's okay, but he's not great. You know, what are you going to do? And then, you know, this is where being 16 at the time, which I was, really doesn't give you the full picture, because they had a great year in 1989, wrestling wise. Great American Bash 1989 is my favorite pay-per-view of all time. It is solid as hell. It has a War Games. It has the Skyscrapers. 1989, you have the trio of matches between Flair and Steamboat, which are fantastic, followed by the trio of matches between Flair and Funk. This is possibly Flair's greatest year, other than maybe, I don't know, 84 or the late or 82 or something like that. He is on a roll, even though business is not that great. You're having half full houses in Ithaca, New York for New York Rumble for Clash of the Champions. But Flair's also the booker right now, and Flair has had a great year. So why wouldn't you want to see three Ric Flair matches in one night? And your tag team division is stacked. You have the Skyscrapers, who are hot. You have Doom, who are hot. You have the Steiner Brothers, who are the tag team champions and hot. And you have the Road Warriors, who are the most over group in the 80s, quite frankly. This sounds like a great idea. It is not. Starrcade 89 takes place Wednesday, December 13th. This is back when we were having, it's here Wednesday or Thursday. This is back when you're having pay-per-views on weeknights. They decide to start the show at 7 p.m. in downtown Atlanta, which means the building is half empty when they start, Chris. And they mention, oh, people are trying to get in through the lobby, blah, blah, blah. Another thing that's really smart idea. People kind of love these types of things when they collected magazines and stuff like that. The four singles competitors you had, Ric Flair was your world champion. Lex Luger was your United States heavyweight champion. Muda was your undefeated television champion. And Sting was your number one contender. Sounds like a plan to me. Sounds great. I'm in. I'm all in. I am all in as a 16-year-old Jeff. I cannot wait for this pay-per-view. And I go over to my friend's house. We're a bunch of us got together that night on a school night when we should have been studying, and my parents didn't like it. We decided to start placing bets on who we think is going to win. Chris, I bet on Muda and Doom. Doom, undefeated going into this, goes 0-3, pinned three times. Muda, who had never been pinned in the company, was possibly their hottest star at the time. 0-3, pinned three times. He's kind of done with the promotion after this. He goes back to Japan in February. Because depending on who you believe, Dave Meltzer or Gary Hart, they refused to turn him babyface. And we talked about this on our Patreon show, I believe, too, that he could have been a great babyface if they had just let him. And somebody, don't know whose choice it was, did not want that to happen. Muda gets frustrated and, you know, just wants to go back home. And he does. And not yet to return until the end of the year. Other great, fantastic failures. They tried to make this look big time because they're going head to head with WWF at the time. And so they have what can only be described as a ramp made out of those things that you see in U-Hauls. The metal things that you bring back from the truck that were rickety. They have like high school risers where they're introducing the people. They try and get some pomp and circumstance going. They're using basically sparklers for their entertainment. It looks, and they have like an old golf scoreboard to keep points up there. That said, some of this wrestling is very, very good. Although here's how they book it. They book it randomly, quote unquote, so that sometimes you see guys two, three times in a row, and sometimes you don't see guys until the end of the night. The Skyscrapers were not involved in this match, in these matches, because Sid got a punctured lung in a match with the Steiners the week before. So he was out. They were replaced by the Wild Samoans, AKA the Samoan SWAT team, this version being Fatu and, the Tonga Kid, a.k.a. the Samoan Savage, a.k.a. Tama from the Islanders, for you old school fans. The tag team matches were all big, meaty men slapping meat. There were stiff clotheslines all over the place. It is great to watch, but the booking will drive you absolutely insane. They try to do something clever in the Steiner Legion of Doom match up there where they tried to, you know, one guy had a guy, I think Hawk had a guy in a power slam above his head, and he clipped the knee and fall to pin and all these other things. The scoring system is convoluted.
I have seen this pay-per-view. It was a long time ago. I didn't see it recently like you did, but I have seen this one. Yes,
the scoring system was convoluted because you had points for pins, countouts, disqualifications, time limit draws. Almost all the matches went between 15 and 20, with the exception of the singles match that lasted, I think, 2 minutes and 20 seconds between Muda and Flair. And it was an awesome 2 minutes and 30 seconds. But after that, you just, Muda's just coming out after that, just going, whatever, let's get this done with. You know, nobody wants to cheer the heel versus heel things because it's not the guys they want to see necessarily. Nobody wants to see Muda versus Luger. I am also at this time because Ole and Arn are around to second Flair to help with Gary Hart and J-Tex. Tully Blanchard nowhere to be seen. So young Jeff at 16 is also asking, where the hell is Tully right now? And his friends are telling, shut up, Hawkins, and watch the wrestling. It's fun, but don't expect it to be good. The tag team matches, I love. I just love. Jim Cornette does color for the tag team matches. Cornette famously also behind the scenes was really wanted the Midnight Express being here and was willing for them to take all three losses because they needed guys who could wrestle. And it was obvious here because the Steiners are still very, very green at this point. The Road Warriors, never been ring technicians. Doom, kind of big and beefy. And of course, you know, the Samoans were thrown in here at the last moment, so nobody was really expecting them to be a part of this. You know, Sting wins, and this is the angle where he is now part of he's accepted as a horseman at the end of this pay-per-view by Ole and Arn, Jeff yelling, what about Tully? And then, of course, they're turned on at the next clash because he has a number one contender match, and he refuses to give it up against Flair, so they throw him out of the horseman. The Road Warriors were always slated to win the tag team version of this because it was originally going to be called Night of the Iron Men. Of course, they come out to Iron Man. It is fantastic in its 80s-ness. It picks up as it goes along because the crowd starts to fill out, but it also kind of drags at times because they booked it, but it's just match, 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 match. Ross is great in this. Jim Ross is a great, great pay-per-view. This is Jim Ross calling it like a sport here, and he's fantastic. And for the tag team side, as I say, he's working with Jim Cornette. For the singles matches, he's working with Terry Funk on color. And Terry is, of course, this is company man Terry. Oh, there's a great night of action, Jim. Oh, they're hanging from the rafters. Can you believe this? I used to fight all these guys because he had lost the I Quit match at New York Knockout before this. So he was retired and he was now an announcer. It's fun for what it is. I will not call it a great pay-per-view. I do not expect all of you to watch this necessarily, but if you want to see, again, big meaty men slapping meat, if you want to see Flair really have three great kind of carry jobs, it's not bad for 2.5 hours worth of your time. Really isn't. Chris, you did not watch, correct?
Not recently.
Yeah. So I yield the floor to, you know, you can take two turns on this one since I took so long.
Okay, Lazy River, I guess we should get the longest discussion that I probably have here done first then. Bryan Danielson turning heel here and going heel against Adam Page. Now, what was your reaction to this, I guess, before I go off?
I watched this. I thought the whole Dynamite was a perfect show. I'm going to be honest with you. And here's why. And I know you don't like the Danielson heel turn. I did. Because I think he's going to be the guy who can babyface against heels and heel against babyfaces. And I thought it was well done because he turned heel with one word, Chris. He turned heel with the word WrestleMania. When I main evented WrestleMania, and look, this makes me a bit of a hypocrite. I don't like them mentioning WWE on this show. Don't get me wrong. Their fan base doesn't mind. I mind. But if you take the big picture and you look at this as Danielson turns heel in the beginning of the show and CM Punk turns back to babyface towards the middle of this show, both very subtly, I thought, in some ways. Maybe not so much with Danielson. Wasn't exactly subtle, him going heel, but he wasn't a heel when he first came out there. He did it during the course of the promo. I thought they were both very well done.
Okay. Yeah.
Floor is yours, Senator. Please go off.
So, I mean, it's not even like really rage. I think that Bryan Danielson, for me as a heel, it's not what I want to see. So I find it boring. And I just, I mean, like, look, I get that they didn't want to do Miro versus Adam Page because I guess it was too obvious or something. But it just seems to me that as I was watching Danielson out there, that entire Dark Order scene would have been perfect for Miro to come down and just wreck the Dark Order and become this like major league menace to the Dark Order. Whereas I think what you're describing is, yeah, Danielson might be perfect at being a situational heel and a situational babyface. Maybe. I don't know.
Let me counter something else. Let me counter a point that we've been making about WWE. We say they don't take good enough care of their stars in the making. And Adam Cole is not a strong promo. He's a decent promo, but he's not a strong promo, in my opinion. Babyface Bryan Danielson comes out here and eats him alive as a babyface. I absolutely agree,
but then that I'm with you, but then that gets back to the original point that this probably should be Miro and not Danielson in the first place.
I agree. I think there was supposed to be Mox originally.
Yeah, and that would work better because Moxley's already been champion.
Yes.
The other issue here is Danielson is so new that, like, I don't know. I have to imagine I'm not the only one who was sort of just, like, looking for, like, forward to, like, a nice, strong Danielson baby's face run. I'm sure not everyone wants that. I'm sure some people like this just fine. I'm aware. let me just preempt
there's a
that.
Little, there's a little, there's a little, there's a little,
no, no, no.
On that fastball of yours there, Chris.
Some other people have other opinions, and that's good to have, but they're not, opinions are not facts, is what I'm saying. And so, like, for me, I just think, yes, they have rushed into turning Danielson heel. It doesn't really work for me. It will yield fine matches. I'm part of the problem, and I guess why this bores me, which is why it doesn't bore me so much as it angers me, or I'm sorry, it doesn't anger me so much as it bores me, strike that, reverse it, it is that, like, ooh, it's a foregone conclusion that Danielson's not winning the title off of Adam Page. So, like, he'll menace the Dark Order and then,
yeah,
Page.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that.
And that's boring. That's boring. I'm angry because now we're just going to be going through the motions and I'm going to be reviewing a storyline. Or conversely, I will be very amused. I cannot wait to get on the air on this week. Danielson makes Paige a one-match wonder and takes the belt right off of him. Ah, I hope that happens, guys. I would love to get on the air and talk about that, but I don't think it will. So until then, I will be bored until we move on to a storyline where Paige is actually in some peril.
For those watching on the video feed, you had some extra cat content going there, and then you scared the cat by being so angry, Chris.
No, I didn't. The haze was just done.
Okay.
She'd been there for a while.
Did you like the Punk non-promo promo?
Yeah, it was fun. Okay. I wasn't ooh and ah to it. But you know, you come out and you juxtapose yourself against MJF. You're the de facto babyface, and I guess Kingston's a babyface now too. So everyone's a babyface out of that program again, hot program. And that's fine. It's fine.
Well, I think Mox and Kingston were probably gonna go heel.
Right. No, I get that. I get that.
And I think probably they just slotted Danielson as in the complete program, as opposed to kind of finessing it a bit to go after all the Dark Order people, which if I had a problem with it, that's my one problem with it. It's like, why is he going to go kick the head of the Dark Order right now?
What, no, it makes, to me, I don't have a problem with that if you accept the premise that it's a good idea to make Danielson the heel here and not Miro. If Danielson's going to be the heel, he has to go hard into it. I thought a lot of the acting was stiff. I thought, like, the WrestleMania line, to your what you said, like, it beyond it being like they shouldn't do it for bad for business or whatever, I just think it's lazy. I think it's unimpressive. Some of the other stuff, if he wanted to rebut Paige when Paige is like, well, I beat Kenny Omega faster than you, I think all Danielson has to say is, well, yeah, in all fairness to me though, Paige, I didn't have Matt and Nick Jackson rooting for me to win the match. that would have made a big difference there in that match. I just like, I I get having Danielson become the Dark Order stalker. I just think he's miscast in the role. And I think the program, again, will yield good matches, but will be a boring story because you know how this ends.
I already do an AEW review show, but I'll bring up a couple things from Dynamite that I like. Can we say that Nyla Rose and Hikaru Shida have crazy chemistry together? Because Nyla's willing to kill herself for Hikaru Shida. It's one of those things. Every time they have a match, Nyla does something insane to her own body, to her that tope or the somersault flip to the chair on the outside was nuts. She'll put herself through tables. They have crazy weird chemistry, and Nyla has that with no other woman on this roster.
Yeah, it's weird because it's not like that with anyone else. She is just honestly one of the best performers on the roster here. I think, like, you know, that kind of stands out. I'm a fan. This was a good match, and I'm normally not really particularly into Nyla Rose matches.
And of course, I adored the Andrade El Idolo FTR Tully promo. Just because it felt like at the end, look, I wish FTR could get a little bit more menace in their promos. They feel like they're playing heels versus being heels at times to me. They don't have the same chip on their shoulder as Tully. This is one of Andrade's better promos. But at the end there, it looks like they're obviously trying to corpse Tully. Like, say, this man, big cojones, huevos, you know, all these other things. And Tully's just trying to be the angriest man in the room. And that's kind of what makes me upset about the Pinnacle. Other than MJF, Tully's the angriest guy in the room compared to the other guys in this Pinnacle faction. I think that's what's holding them back from being a top tier menace, in my opinion.
Yeah, Pinnacle's a weird faction. I guess we could do a bigger breakdown of them at a later point, but like, the sum is not, it's not the whole of the parts.
They're not a unit.
Because like Wardlow's already on his way out. He's like the tank, but like we've already established that like Wardlow's going to get like ditched at some point. And if anything, it seems kind of dumb that he hasn't put that one together so far. Spears is just sort of like in a holding pattern. He's got the chairs. He likes chairs. FTR, like they don't, the cohesion with MJF doesn't really feel there. Like it still just feels like FTR with Tully are like just the hired guns of MJF rather than like part of a faction.
Yeah, I would agree there. And maybe that's what they are. I actually prefer this Andrade, Alice, or Malakai Black FTR faction. I think they'd make a great foursome. I think I prefer that to the Pinnacle. But, you know, we'll see what happens because I think something's afoot. Let's see what happens between Arn and Tully during this 8-man in Chicago where NWA died. Night of the Skywalkers, Starrcade. I believe that is Starrcade. No, Starrcade 87? Yeah. What? Anything else in on Dynamite that you really, really liked or hated or wanted to bring up?
That I really, really liked or hated that I wanted to bring up. Leo Rush and Dante Martin are a pretty good little team.
They are fantastic.
Thank you.
Let's talk about this because Leo Rush is just, he's on another level, and I can't believe WWE didn't. I mean, they had him. They had him. He wanted to do things for him. All he wanted to do was merchandise, a piece of the merchandise for the Bobby Lashley stuff and to wrestle. That's all he wanted to do. And they wouldn't give it to him. And
they liked that almighty idea. They sure did. Cause he's still Bobby Lashley, the almighty.
And let's not shade the Acclaimed here. The Acclaimed had a great part in this too. I mean, Max Caster is one of the guys I look forward to, but Anthony Bowens, between this and the Danielson match, he's had a couple of really good weeks, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, Bowens is definitely a guy who...
He's the worker of the group.
Yeah, for sure. Caster's the character, though, and like you need that.
Even though his thing is the most basic thing ever, I live for their entrance every week. I do. I want to hear what Caster has to say. I want to see Bowens be effing ridiculous, screaming the name of the city as if he's a baby face. And then I just want to see them get their butts kicked. Much like I adored 2.0 and Eddie Kingston in a promo.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, like the 2.0 Kingston promo was quite funny.
Fails to amuse me.
Then referring to Garcia as their son, like, yeah, it's all good stuff. It's all good stuff.
You have another slot here if you'd like to take it.
I have another slot here if I'd like to take it. Man, let me look at NXT here. Tony D'Angelo versus Dexter Lumis. That should really have been a feud where you have the serial killer versus the mafia hitman. Like, that should go on for months. You have Jacket Time. Lord knows I love Jacket Time.
Do you?
Yeah. It's
thought you were dating these days.
you saw what I was doing there. You saw what I was doing there.
You were jacking in the wind earlier. I thought you might.
Yeah. No. That is a setup, and you went for it. And
saw
that's
the softball.
Good.
I had to
there
say.
There you
that.
Go. There you go.
Chris, we are getting a War Games with women who stink.
Dude. Yeah. Like, okay, this show ended with a War Games. I was rereading it. I'm like, oh, yeah, hell. This ended with a War Games announcement. This is going to suck. This is going to be a really lousy War Games.
Io's going to be fine. Dakota is fantastic. Those two,
Cora Jade running was god awful.
Cora, Toxic Attraction. We had these ladies on ladders, and that wasn't the best idea. Now we're gonna have them in War Games. This serious blood feud. Look, Raquel is gonna. This again, we have to have Raquel get the win. She's already gotten a win in War Games once to get her over. Gotta do it again. Because they're not feeding her opponents that make her look good.
I guess it's better than being cut.
That's a point for Chris. Who is going to be the fourth woman on this babyface team?
I thought the fourth woman was Cora Jade.
It's Cora. Io.
Gonzalez. Io.
Gonzalez. And who knows? Because Zoe Stark, I don't think, can get in there.
No,
she was using the crutch. So we have a slot here. Oh. I thought it might be Tegan Nox until she got cut on Thursday.
Yeah.
I'll take an off the board pick.
Okay.
Because I get the feel. See, I have a feeling they're going to do that. This is going to be the Kevin Owens War Games where he just comes in for the one shot and does it. But I'm going to go off the board. I'm going to say Mako Satomura.
I'm going to go Indy Hartwell.
Indy Hartwell is a good choice. As a baby face?
Yeah, because Indy's basically a baby.
I guess the ways are now baby.
Yeah, face. Yeah, yeah. Like they've been.
Yeah,
a baby
you're
face
correct. Yeah. I think that's it. I think you nailed it there. I think it's gonna be Indy. Main roster. I could see them putting Nikki Cross in here. I really could, just because they're not doing anything with her right now.
Yeah, as Nikki Ash. Yeah, I lean.
She does
towards
the superhero fly off the top of the cage.
Still yeah. Leaning towards Indy Hartwell.
No, I think you're correct. I think you're exactly correct on that. As I did not watch a lot of NXT, do you have anything else on this? I mean, they did a poker angle.
Oh, yeah. God, this is a riveting poker game. Well, boy, was it ever, where Cameron Grimes bluffs, what's his face?
Duke Hudson. Middle management all the way. Duke Hudson loves the 4th of July and having barbecues at his house. Duke Hudson, good American name.
This gimmick sucks. Like it blows. And I mean,
it sucks and blows at the same time. That's amazing.
It's quite bad. It's quite bad. It makes me want to fold on this company. And I hope this company folds. And then we can move on to Raw. Shall we move on to Raw?
I didn't watch it.
A lot of good stuff here you missed. Bianca Belair had a far too competitive match with Tamina that was well worked, but like went almost 5 minutes. I was confused as to why this match was going so long. And then Street Profits had an okay match at the Alpha Academy. Like, they're sort of making Otis a bit of a monster heel. He works in that role.
I like him.
Yeah,
I'm not hearing anything that I haven't seen before, though.
No, you're not hearing anything you haven't seen before. This is Raw we're talking about, Jeff.
Okay, then let's get out of WWE land. I got something.
Lastly, Finn Balor got goobed out to Kevin Owens with like a very like lackluster stunner that pinned Finn Balor with little fanfare.
And we're teasing an Owens heel turn, right?
Oh no, he's already heel.
He's full on heel, or is he?
Maybe he is just don't trust anybody. I don't know. I think he's a heel. I don't care.
I am going to give some praise to a gentleman that is under the radar because he is in the third promotion in the United States. It's a guy that kind of got the short shrift while he was in the Federation, as we like to say. I watched a little bit of Impact this week. Old Impacts as well. Steve Cutler, a.k.a. Steve Macklin, former member of the Forgotten Sons. This guy's really good. And he never got to show it because he was stuck in this thing. He was stuck, you know, he was a prelim guy in NXT for the most part, and then he got the Forgotten Sons gimmick, and then he got forgotten. Really good base for the X Division type guys. Really just solid, is in his place. You know, I'm not the biggest technical guy in the world in terms of being able to tell you what they're doing, but he's catching everybody. You know, he's pulling off his moves well. It doesn't look like he's putting anybody in danger, and he's a very underrated promo. His promos come off as a real guy talking to you, whether or not he's a heel or a babyface. He's just a real guy. He's not mustache twirling. He's intense, but he's not mustache twirling, and I like him. I like him a lot, Chris.
Nice. I'm glad that he's landed on his feet. I always thought there was something there. The Forgotten Sons gimmick was really the absolute death for him because Blake was kind of the more trusted hand of the two. But I mean, if you see that a former tag champion's being put in your tag team and then being not featured, you know that you're basically in a kiss of death unit. And
yeah, they were red shirts, and they were going to be red shirts for Corbin in that very short time that they were there.
That's right. That's right. That would have made some sense as a faction for Corbin.
Anything else in your lazy river queue?
Not that I can think of.
I don't either. So let's close it up from there, guys. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. I return on Friday afterwards. So we'll be recording next week if Chris has time during the weekend. I'll put something out over the weekend. Who knows? But you can follow me at CrapGame13. You follow Chris at DWATG. And just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. You can watch the show, watch our weird looks at each other at youtube.com/voicesofwrestling. Chris also, once again, thank our sponsor, MyBookie. Use Chris's code ROPES, R-O-P-E-S. Get double your initial deposit. Chris is also busy with the political wonkery on Don't Worry About the Government, which is what DWATG stands for.
Yeah, Don't Worry About the Government had a show that came out this week that will be out on like iTunes probably tomorrow at some point when I sit down and edit it. But the video's version is up right now at patreon.com/DWATG. Doing a call-in show on, it's going to be beautiful on Monday, not on Thursday, like the Shake Them Ropes call-in show. Make sure to message Jeff. It's going to be Thursday night this upcoming week here.
During dinner time.
Yeah, DM him. Shoot him a DM to get the Zoom link so that you can call into the... No, do DM. Please send him a DM so
the
you get the Zoom
happening.
Link. There's going to be a Zoom link, and you're going to want to be there. You're going to want to be there. Anyways, there's going to be a Don't Worry About the Government call-in show on Monday night, and you can find out what time when I decide it by going to the Twitter account at DWATG. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, and if you want guitar lessons, I give those as well, and you can get in touch with me on Twitter or via email or talk to Jeff, or you know, there's many ways to find out how to get lessons from me. It's good stuff, really.
Mom passed the stuffing.